tree line breaks in the wide open space.
Hi, everyone. This is Austin welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is April 1st, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together, they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We'll be discussing questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask us a question live on air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Are we all here and ready to go?
We're ready.
I am too.
Yes, I'm.
All righty. We'll go straight to the opening riff, which comes from a Kuo session from March 25th, 2001. Kuo says, "Your plan as learning entities interested in the evolution of spirit was not to be here and be wise, but to be here and be confused. You are hoping, by coming into this very dense physical illusion, to become completely disoriented and to wake up in the midst of a true sea of confusion. And the reason that you hoped for this was that you had the feeling that you could come to a better balance of self, a more pure choice of polarity, and a more passionate desire to seek the truth."
Thank you, Austin. I'm not sure when, in the middle of any incarnation, anyone begins to become aware of some uncomfortable feelings that we're not here to play entirely, at least, that there might be some reason for our being here. Some of us avoid that thought for the entire incarnation and simply play. If having a normal incarnation with all of its ups and downs could be considered playtime, that's debatable. Everyone would say that his incarnation was remarkably difficult, apparently much of a playtime, all in all. Be that as it may, we wake up to the fact that there may be other levels of meaning for us, necessarily for anyone else, but for us. Beyond the everyday. And this is both inspiring and terrifying. It's inspiring because there's the opportunity to seek into more noble levels of experiencing life on planet Earth. people have written records of them. These nobly lived lives. And we want to follow them. But we don't just want to imitate them. Which in the end haunts us as we seek to be uniquely and totally ourselves. In which we seek to make the searching from the top levels of the everyday and mundane into the deeper levels of nobly lived lives. How shall we frame our existence in our own way, creating meaning for ourselves? For this is by and large what we end up discovering as our goal. We cannot accept the easy acceptances of our forefathers. We cannot become Christians or Muslims or Buddhists. That's simple for us. Those lives had to be lived with the giving up of free will to a certain extent, instance of other people's beliefs as our own. For many of us, that does not seem like the thing to do. And so we set off along a trail of seeking meaning for ourselves. How shall we frame a life for ourselves that has genuine and authentic meaning? Oh, how confused we are. Confusion around us swirls and eddies in a constant state of temptation to pull us away from meaning, and it's a chaos. Is what we are doing genuine? Is it our own? Are our conclusions right for us? Really right? Have we found our own holy grail? Our own symbol of rightness, our own standard of a well-lived life. Perhaps not, but the search is ours to continue. The first half of the search is involved in disentangling ourselves from the clinging beliefs of other people for us. Oh, he is such and such. Oh, she is this way. They think they know us. These people from our past. Yet know us they do not. Indeed, we are only day by day discovering ourselves. And that discovery is worth everything.
Thank you, Carla. Moving on to our questions for the day. Our first question comes from Danilo on Facebook. Simple question. Danilo wants to know which songs we play on the show. Currently, we are using a song from an artist called Lord Huron called Lonesome Dreams. And when Gary and I first started hosting, we were using a song from My Morning Jacket called Circuital. The next question comes from Chris G., sent through the Law of One Raw Material Study Group on Facebook. Chris asks, can you go more in depth to what this tone in my ear is? Constantly, mostly on the right side. I think it is a stream direct connect to the most infinite. God's hands on me is what it feels like. Is it? I would like to preface any answers that we have just to remind people that on this show we address questions from a human perspective. We're not channeling or doing any sort of psychic readings or anything like that. So we can't necessarily confirm what your ear tone might be or where it might be coming from. But we can discuss plenty about what we know about ear tones and what the different possibilities might be from our human knowledge. Do we have any takers on that one?
Well, when Don asked Ra what the tones in his ear were, he would get them in both right and the left. Ra suggested that was a guide that was giving Don an indication of either yes in the right ear tone or no in the left ear tone as to whether or not to follow a current course of thought or action. So in this case, it was a guide, and whether, you know, what kind of contact that has to the Creator. I think we're all connected to the Creator, and certainly our guides are as well. So that would be the most that I could say about that. How about you, Carla?
I think it's always dangerous to assume that something that we are experiencing is direct contact with the one original thought. What it might be other than that is certainly a matter for conjecture. It could be nothing more than simple tinnitus, which most of us have. I certainly do. I have a constant, I would describe it as a ringing in my ear, but it's not really a ringing. It's more of an ocean of sound that never stops. It just constantly is my companion. And I don't ascribe any meaning at all to it. I figure I'm somewhat deaf, and it's probably an artifact of the growing deafness. So I don't pay any attention to it. Now, you can go anywhere from not paying any attention to it to having the feeling that it is a direct contact. And I would be the last person to tell you you were right or wrong. I would only suggest caution. Because if you think that you're right ear is guiding you to do this or that, then that's the same as giving up your power of decision to decide yourself. And maybe that's what you want to do. Maybe that's what you crave is the ability to give up your power of free will. I would be cautious about doing that. But you are certainly welcome to do it. And you are certainly welcome to think that it is a contact with the one infinite creator. You have every right to feel that. I just see it as a somewhat dangerous choice. What about you, Gary?
Likewise, I agree with you guys. Like Austin said, like you said, Carla, it's we can't see into the actual situation, what's actually happening, and consequently can neither confirm nor deny. But in bouncing off of the basic situation, I would agree that it's inadvisable to supersize an event of that sort to having a source in the one original thought, the one creator, because, like Carla, like you were saying, you may abdicate your free will in that respect, but it also has the potential to inflate the egoic mode of consciousness, the ego self or the separate self, in that. That separate self, that personality shell, is still likely fully operational, fully alive and in motion, and you fully identify with it, more or less. So if signals are coming from, quote-unquote, God that confirm a course of action or deny another course of action, then that inflates that separate self, that strengthens it and energizes it, and what the separate self tends to do is obscure the actual self, the essential self, the real self. It hides it behind various masks that are born of past conditioning and the limitations of the point of view, etc. So there's a danger there, and like Carla, I would advise a note of caution. And you have to remember also that regardless of the source of these tones, there is always the seeker's interpretation. It's up to you, Chris, to interpret what a tone in the right ear means, or tone in the left ear, or mixed signals. In no other circumstance is the interpretation really given to you. It's always to you to decide what it means, how it applies, what course of action you should take, etc. So that's another reason not to think, oh, this is from God, because then you kind of give that interpretation up to something else, and another part of you, an external entity, may be happy to take that interpretive power from your hands. And the tones themselves, I've experienced them. I have both what I would consider, what's the condition you name, Carla? Tinnitus? Tinnitus, yeah.
I think some people say tinnitus.
I may have that. I think most people have a constant low ringing in the ears. But I've also had a distinct phenomena that I do associate with what Jim mentioned, Don was asking about, and that's the tones in the ears. Sometimes it's clear as a bell, like a gong has just been rung inside of my head on one side or the other, and it's boom, and it almost feels like it's going to knock me
over. That will get your attention.
Oh, yeah. Clear as day, and it's very very distinct. And I've had many of these experiences, and very seldom have I ever been able to figure out what the hell it's actually means and what it's saying. I do my best to try to correlate it to what I was thinking of, what's going on in my life, and it all seems totally random. I could be thinking of a yellow table, and then there's a ring in the left ear, right ear. So sometimes I get a positive tone or on the right side, I suspect that it has some connection to what I'm thinking. But often the way I interpret those, and it's just my interpretation, is that there is I take tones on the right side as comforting notes of reassurance, and tones on the left side I don't know what to do with. So that's my response.
I think going off of that, you described two different types of ear tones, and Chris is describing a constant ear tone. I think that the more, like you're just describing, Gary, the sort of short, instant ear tones and what Don was asking about in the raw material is a little more dangerous when people start ascribing some sort of confirmation to them. I've seen people quote the raw material where Don asks that question and then justify their actions or expressions or thoughts because they had an ear tone that went along with it, and they felt like that meant that what they were doing was right. And I feel like that's a pretty shoddy way to determine whether what you're doing are right is not. You can use your own powers of discernment without any sort of ear tone, I think, to determine the right course of action. The constant ear tone, I'm not sure. It seems to me like Carla and Gary were saying is probably more tinnitus. If you feel like that is putting you in a more direct connection with the most infinite or God, then perhaps you are just experiencing your own innate ability to feel that connection, and the ear tone is reminding you that that connection is there. Could be possible. I'm not sure exactly why a direct connection to God would express itself as tinnitus, which most people feel is sort of an annoying thing. I do also experience tinnitus, and I sort of use it in that sense, in that whenever I realize or recognize a tinnitus, it's not strong enough to where I always realize that it's there, but when I'm sitting around in a quiet environment, I'll sometimes notice it, and I'll try to connect that with grounding me back to a place of inner reflection and compassion. It will help remind me to get out of my ego self and try to look at the universe in the perspective of love again. So it can be a tool. It can be beneficial, and it can definitely be used to help your spiritual perspective. But I'm not sure if it would necessarily be a direct expression of a connection to God or not.
I think lots of seekers in various ways look to their environment, look to others, look to signs, experiences, feelings within the self for some kind of feedback system. I am having this thought, I am having this question, and I would like some counsel, some advice, some feedback, or a sign or a confirmation. And there's any number of ways that we do that, and I think the tones can be one way. But again, Austin, I like that you have that note of caution in your response and using it that way. I think it's all right if you want to use a tone as a confirmation or denial, as long as you always are remembering that it's your interpretation that's being implied, and there is no exception to that rule as far as I'm aware. You're deciding whether that means confirmation or not, and how that applies to the question you have in mind. And, Austin, you were talking about connection to God, and that triggered in me the thought that if one needs to measure or evaluate or determine their depth of connection to the Creator, I don't know that that's a necessary or helpful thing to do, because that sort of realization is somewhat outside the purview of the intellectual mind. But if you're going to apply the intellectual mind to make that assessment, I think your criteria should look at the depth of peace you feel, regardless of outer circumstance. Should look at the joy radiating out from you. Should look at your capacity to respond to situations with love. I think that is going to be a truer measure of your depth of connection to the Creator versus manifestations of particular phenomena like ear tones or like ability to do certain things or perceive things that other people don't perceive, etc. I think it's in the joy and the love and the unity that you feel that your connection to God is going to be experienced and manifest.
That sounds good.
I'll also take a quick opportunity to describe a certain phenomena which can happen. I can't remember the name, but the way that our ears work, there's very small vibrations that are used to pick up sound and then send it to our brain. And if you ever hear feedback coming from a speaker when you move a microphone too close to a speaker, supposedly that can sometimes happen in your ear as well, where the hairs around your eardrum start vibrating, and it sort of creates a feedback loop. So sometimes when you hear a tone, an instant tone that sort of fades out and it seems to have no connection, sometimes it's just a sort of a vibration feedback loop getting caused in your ear that then sort of your ear corrects, your brain corrects to sort of fade that out so it's not interfering with your hearing. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of a material explanation of something that I believe could be a metaphysical signal, but it does happen randomly sometimes, random physical phenomena.
That points to why it's all the more confusing, too.
Yeah.
Because absolutely, it could be purely physical, purely biological, and then you have to determine you know, what's going on.
Yeah, it is a very confusing thing.
It really comes back to the quality of the self.
Mm-hmm. It's great to use those tones to remind yourself to look within and see how you're feeling. You can at any moment go within and do a sort of self-assessment, but it's nice to sometimes have reminders to do that because our brain can go every which direction during the course of our days. So even if it is just a purely physical phenomenon, we can use it spiritually.
Yeah, good point.
Any more to say to Chris?
No, we don't know.
All right.
Is the very first thing we need to impress upon him. We honestly don't know the answer to his question. And I hope that all of these various considerations have been helpful.
Moving on, we have a couple of questions from Eve D. on the Law of One Raw Material Study Group on Facebook. Eve asks, to your knowledge, have there been or are there any mainstream scientists that have taken the raw material as a supplement to assist them in their theories in general, which have provided fact? Which is a great question, and I hope that maybe Jim and Carla have some sort of answer.
Well, we really don't have any kind of answer except that we know that Bruce Perret was dedicated to attempting to find ways to make the Law of One physics, such as it is, material, complementary to the physics of Dewey Larson, because he is in a support group for Dewey Larson's physics. And is very interested in trying to get Larson's system of physics into the mainstream. As far as I know, he himself has not been successful in this, but he's the one that has been attempting to. The only one that I know of. Jim, what about you?
I just remember years ago, Don was a good friend of a professor of biology here at the University of Louisville, Burt Monroe. And one of Burt Monroe's passions that came out of his biology study was searching out contacts with Bigfoot that had been reported around the country. He would travel to wherever there was a sighting and make casts of the footprints and come back. And he was also interested in UFOs and that as well. And he felt that the material that Ra gave concerning Bigfoot and how the evolution of the human being came about, walking upright and the jaw changing, some development and dropping body hair and so forth, he thought that was just right in line with everything that had ever been posited in his particular field of evolution of plants and animals. So that's the only thing I can think of. But we don't keep track of the scientists, so I don't really know what they're doing and what their resources are.
Moreau has since passed on.
Yep.
So we have no way of knowing what else besides his work has been done. We haven't looked for it. It's not important to us. I guess that's the basic thing, it's not enough important, doesn't have enough importance to us to attempt to try to get it into the mainstream. For as far as I'm concerned, it will always be outside of the mainstream. It will always be on the fringes, and there's something good about that. There's something good about being truly weird.
Do you have any thoughts to add, Gary?
Just that in my years manning the LL Research inbox, nothing has arrived that says I'm from such and such university. I'm an astrophysicist, and I'm interested in this material, or from some think tank or research and development lab, et cetera. So that's a negative on my knowledge.
Just thinking over the Law of One, Don did ask some pretty scientific questions, but I don't think I could point to anything that could be like directly applicable to modern scientific systems. He realized that the focus of the channeling was the Law of One, so he always kind of went back to spiritual principles, but the ideas about photons and light and stuff discussed in the Law of One, I don't think at this point in our understanding of physics could even be verified or tested. I'm not sure how much they would really add to somebody doing some legitimate research. Carla mentioned Bruce Perrett and his group. If you want to know more about their work, they are reevaluating Dewey-Larson's reciprocal system. They have a website. It is rs2theory.org, and you can go there and read about their work with Dewey-Larson's system, which is an older system that they are attempting to reconfigure to match our modern understanding of quantum theory.
And it was this particular system that on which Don based his questions to Ra. The basic guiding equation of that system is velocity equals either space over time or time over space. V equals S over T or T over S, which is very easy to correlate to space-time being our outer realm, and T over S, time-space, as being metaphysical realms or the inner planes, and that whole system of research on the inner planes that is spearheaded especially by the spiritualists depends from the positing that these inner planes are real. And so does Larson's theory. And Larson himself actually wrote a book on the metaphysical implications of the physical theory of physics that was the reciprocal system. And it's very interesting how close his biological ethical unit comes to equaling a mind-body-spirit complex. It's similarly obscure in its complex description. And when you come right down to it, it's trying to say that we have various parts of us that come together to make the whole. We have a mind. We have a physical body. And we have the spirit, which is a very nebulous concept, but in it goes everything that isn't either the mind or the body. And that leaves a lot of territory in our experience, you know, that we directly experience day to day. A lot of things that we experience are not from our mind, and we know it. And we go, what is that? You know, and we don't know what that is. And the seeking out of what that is for us is a very challenging thing. And part of what draws us onward, I think.
Any more thoughts on that particular question from anybody?
Not me. Nope.
Alrighty. Eve's second question is, has there ever been any governmental agency that has attempted to debunk the raw material or attempted to shut down or hide the materials that LL Research produces due to their vast knowledge?
Well, I don't know if it's due to their vast knowledge or not, but sure, we've been debunked and people have tried to shut us down and stop us and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's wild what lengths some people have gone to try to put us out of business. And they haven't succeeded. We are what we are. And the material is what it is. We've managed to keep the material absolutely authentic. And people can take a look at it any time that they want to and see what they think. And that's the glory of it. It still exists for people to examine, people who have a deeper interest in the evolution of mind, body, and we welcome their interest.
I don't think that the work of LL makes a big enough splash on the outer scene in the societal realm to attract much notice on that level. But I would imagine, as was evident during the raw contact itself and has been an ongoing topic in our studies and in Carl and Jim's channeling, is that this organization and its work and the people who form it and attempt to stand in the light that we and this work attract some metaphysical attention from the loyal opposition. And they, I believe, attempt to exert their influence from their own levels upon this work and those associated with this work, but also there exists the potential that those sources within the loyal opposition, those discarnate beings, also exert influence through players on the outer scene in the third density world. That said, I think at the same time, I like to believe that LL Research is protected to an extent, too, owing to what we attempt to do. So that's, otherwise I have no specific knowledge of any particularly nefarious agenda to close.
Oh, the
down.
Only nefarious agenda of which I'm aware is way back in the 80s, before the raw materials, when Don was associated most closely with Andrea Puharich. Andrea himself was under examination by the CIA, and Don, for a while there, was very close to him. And so they investigated us. They talked to our neighbors, and they took our phones, and this went on for a couple of years. And they just couldn't find anything. You know, this little Episcopalian lady that held meetings in her home. I mean, it just didn't seem to be much to it. So they finally gave up. And from the worldly standpoint, they were absolutely right. There's not anything to it in a worldly sense. It's all, as Gary said, in an unworldly sense, in a distinctly unworldly sense, in a specifically unworldly sense. And that is the world of metaphysics. And in the world of metaphysics, and only in the world of metaphysics has there been lasting interest in shutting us down, or at least in taking our power. And that would be from negatively oriented entities on this side and on the inner planes that would like to remove any metaphysical power we might have generated by our seeking. And no matter how hard they try, as Gary again said, I think that those who seek in a positive sense are protected by the light. There's a good deal of energy there and power for the good that is inherent in that line of seeking. And to that extent, I believe we are protected.
Alrighty. Any more comments on that one?
Carla used the word worldly, and that was a good word. Wish it had come to me when I was earlier responding. But on that worldly level, I would also add the nuance that LL Research and this philosophy doesn't seek to gather worldly power to itself, or to wield worldly power, or to have any sort of power over others, or to lead any sort of social movement. This philosophy, I think, is about the individual seeker, and is offered in a very dispassionate, free will respecting way, so that the interested seeker, the individual, can use it as they see fit and participate on the group level as they see fit. But otherwise, we as an organization aren't seeking per se to lead any sort of social movement.
Right.
Precisely.
How true.
Eve's question comes from a certain standpoint that I see sort of prevalent in the kind of community that uses the Law of One, that might find the Law of One, and that there's this belief that there is a major power. A lot of people call it the Illuminati, but some people just call it the powers that be. Seek to shut down ways for humans to have self-discovery, that they are actively attempting to stop the individual from gaining their own power. And who knows how true that is or not. But if you do believe that the raw material has helped you gain some individual power and some individual self-awareness, we could serve as an example that we're still standing and there's no major operation going on to try to shut us down, that maybe they're not as interested in this sort of material as one might think. Our next question comes from Brian R. from the Law of One Raw Material Study Group on Facebook. He's got a couple questions concerning Jesus. Brian says, Jesus of Nazareth's claim to be God or be one with God, does that mean that he was seventh density? He claims that some of his generation would live to see his return in the future. I take that statement to mean either there are certain immortals who live amongst us, or he was talking to the spiritual beings who inhabited the people he was speaking to. We've got some information from the raw material concerning Jesus. Anybody want to go in depth a little bit about that?
Go ahead, Austin.
Okay, let me pull up some exact quotes. Concerning Jesus being seventh density, Ra claimed that Jesus was a fourth density wanderer who was on the verge of fifth density and decided as sort of one last hurrah he was going to come back and give it his best shot to spread a message of compassion and love and self-awareness and self-seeking in an attempt to help the harvest. So the idea that he is seventh density, the idea that he claims to be God, I'm not sure how much of that message was distorted by the Bible, translations of the Bible, or people trying to co-opt the Bible's message, but I believe that Jesus' idea of claiming to be God is the fact that everybody is God, everybody is the one creator, It's often cited something that Jesus said, "I believe all these things that I do, you shall do, and more." I'm not too familiar with the Bible, so I'm not the best person to speak on this, but I believe that the heart of his message was in claiming that everybody was part of the Creator and not him specifically. He realized this connection and he tried to share it with others, but he wasn't attempting to say that he was the only God and that he should be revered.
That's right. He was distinctly opposed to that idea. Indeed, he said at one point, it was said that he said at one point in a parable that he who did even the least of actions that was kind, going to see widows and orphans, or going to see prisoners, or things of this nature, that these entities were he. If you saw those people, you were looking at Jesus. And he said, even the least of these, my brother, you know, is me. So get over it, basically. I mean, that was the gist of the parable. He did not want to be co-opted to the world of politics and history. And when offered that at the temptation, where in actual history there were beings who wanted to, people who wanted to get him to declare that he was king of the Jews and lead a movement of Jewish people to free them from the bond of the Romans that were being co-opted by the Roman Empire at this point. Later on, Jewish people defied the Romans at their own distress at Masada and died. So, I mean, there was no hope in this, but this is what it has been suggested that Judas wanted for him, and he said, get thee behind me. You know, he just felt that Judas was the same as Satan and that he had no desire. Put up your sword, he said, my kingdom is not of this world. And he really meant it. He really meant it. His kingdom was not of this world. So I don't believe that he wanted to put himself, to style himself as a special emissary with special powers. I believe that he wanted to bring out to people that they had special powers, that everybody has special powers, that everybody is worthy, that all are heirs through hope of being part of the kingdom of Jesus Christ, which means part of the kingdom of the Father. His logic was from the Father to the Son and from the Son to his spiritual sons, and Jesus identified every single person on earth as his spiritual son and heir. So he was pretty well spreading it thin in terms of claiming to be God. Or he did say that he was one with God, but he said that we were all one with God. He didn't claim anything for himself, but he didn't claim for us all. And no, I agree completely with, well, who's not going to agree with what's in the book, that he, according to Ra, did not. That he was not seventh density. He was very specifically at the end of his fourth density work and ready to graduate to fifth density and decided to turn back one last time and do one last service. And he really did a beautiful service. And then he went on. I think that in terms of There are beings, immortals who live amongst us that did not occur to Jesus. I think that in terms of there being a spiritual being that inhabited the people he was talking to, I think that he felt that insofar as the spirit inhabited any of us, so did the Father. And that all of us potentially had the spirit within us and could call upon that and bring that forward in our lives. Gesundheit. So in the way in which you mean it, Brian, I don't think that he was talking to spiritual beings. I think that idea of spiritual beings is probably not what you had in mind. You had in mind entities who are alien to us, who live among us and do good things and then move on. No, he wasn't saying that there was that either.
The idea of a second coming of Jesus, Ra, I believe, said this was a little bit of a complicated or convoluted wording. Ra said that this meant that Jesus's density would be coming back, that there would be beings like Jesus, since Jesus was a wanderer of fourth density at that time. Ra says that Jesus was speaking of the coming of fourth density, where fourth density would come to Earth, and there would supposedly be beings in the fourth density that would welcome Earth to the fourth density. But Ra did say that that was sort of a complicated or convoluted wording of the situation.
Mm-hmm. I think the category of immortal that Brian is using in this question pertains to a realm of mythology, fantasy, etc. I think there's no outer body or vehicle of any density, as far as I'm aware, that meets the definition of immortal. All outer physicals are born and die. But back to what Carla was indicating, I think he was aware of the immortality of the self, the imperishability of the self that is within each clay, so to speak, physical vehicle. And it's interesting how on that simple pivot of exclusivity versus inclusivity that so much of world history for the past 2,000 years has been formed, that idea, I believe, in general, the Christian religion got so wrong that it's had far-reaching consequences for the world that we live in today. Had they not made Jesus' message into an exclusive teaching, as if he was the exclusive Son of God and nobody else could be of that status or of that nature, versus inclusive in that he was a Son of God just like we are all the children of God. It's a shame that that wasn't gotten accurately.
That's right. And if you will look at the history of the Catholic Church, it's the Roman Catholic Church that has co-opted power.
Yeah.
And for the most part, and has done the major job of co-opting power. And everything else has just sort of been a feeble objection to that. And I say feeble on the standpoint, from the standpoint of worldly things. Martin Luther and all of his kin are very successful in a metaphysical sense, not successful in a worldly sense necessarily, except for the fact that they too fall into the mistake of exclusivity and thinking that their dogma is the only dogma and their difference from the Catholic Church is all important and people have to believe as they believe rather than the wicked Catholic Church And meanwhile, the Catholic Church is still feeling like they are not, they are the church.
Mm-hmm.
And they represent Christendom on this earth. And but the problem is that Jesus' message as it stood was not useful for politics. And it was necessary that it become useful for politics. And so exclusivity was born. Because in exclusivity lies all of the power. If they're exclusively the patrons of God, they have the ability to dispense that power as they will and only give it to the kings. At one point, kings were all important, all powerful in this world. Or at least in the new world, I mean in the world of Europe and its environs, then it was necessary that the church become exclusive. If it was exclusive, then kings could be held at ransom. And if the Pope said that the kings were out, they were out. And it was crushing. And if the church and they were close, they were in. And they wanted to be in. And even to this day, kings on this earth bow to Christ. So in Europe, and feel that it is appropriate, but these things are just ground into us as part of our culture.
Well said.
All righty, we're getting close to the end here. You've been listening to LL Researchers in the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/llresearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then. And we love you all.
I lay alone in Allen Coast, and only souls I see are ghosts. I run through a wooded aisle and chase the sunlight mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, and the tree line breaks in the wide open space. I stare at a bright red sun, search all day and never find anyone. Planets turn and the ocean